Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft closed doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichten, and with me is Jack Borman. Jack, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. So what we're going to do in this pod is NBA over-unders. If you remember earlier this offseason, I talked to you. We did a pod based on NBA futures, teams with the best future, and I mentioned that we were not ripping off, say, Bill Simmons or any of the other ones that did similar content. I talked to you before. This was not ripped off. Today, I cannot make that claim. This is a very popular segment that most pods do, and we are more or less running it back similar to them. But how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm very excited now that the NBA season is getting pretty close here. I turn on League Pass, seeing some real players playing some real preseason games, not against the Guangzhou Lung Lions, has been fun to watch. Just kind of got the itch again. You know, it takes a while sometimes for the itch to come back, but you know, being at Target Center a few times in the last week, seeing some players being in the locker room has been fun.
Yeah. I'm not sure how much to take away from any individual preseason game, especially when they're playing a team from out in China. It's hard to get a hold of, but it's certainly nice to just get any sort of basketball on our television screens and getting to analyze whatever happens. But yeah, they got two more. A 23-hour between game road back-to-back in the preseason is truly incredible stuff. Sounds like the game against the Bulls will be the real when everyone plays, and then the game Thursday against what in Philly is going to be, it's going to be a sight to behold. It seems like, I'm not sure. Hopefully Johnny Juzang can throw up 50 or something. That'll be fun. But yeah,
Will Joel Embiid play is the bigger question on Friday. They've been.
Are you talking in that game or at all?
Because I think in that game, they've been pump faking Embiid, maybe playing in a preseason game. We'll see. But
I will say I've been doing some fantasy basketball, and where to pick Joel Embiid is just like, you could tell me he is a zero fantasy wise. You could tell me you should be taking him in the second or third round because he's going to play 60 games. That seems unlikely, but. You know what I'm saying? It's just that whole Philly team is just good luck.
All questions you got to consider when doing these over-unders.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to focus mostly on the West, and I guess we'll just start right at the top. We're going to pick each team's over-under in the West, how many wins they'll get on the season, more or less. And I'm use FanDuel's lines to make sure Jack and I are picking on the same numbers, although I'm sure all these books are pretty much in line with each other on this sort of thing. But first team, not a surprise, listed as the top team in the West, according to Vegas, the Oklahoma City Thunder, defending champs, all that fun stuff. Their over-under is 62.5, and they won 68 games last year. Jack, what do you think? Over-under 62.5 for OKC?
I think this is one of the easier ones on the board for me. I mean, you know me. I'm a Thunder hater through and through. It brings me no joy to say that it's an easy over for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I understand everybody wants to talk about the championship hangovers that tend to come and teams just not caring from night to night just because, you know, that they won a title. But with a team that's as young as the Thunder are and with how, like, the finals just didn't feel like a big event this past year for the first time in quite some time. And I think that bothered them that people aren't really quite giving them the respect or celebrating that title You know, the way that it you know, maybe we would if it wasn't the Thunder and it was a team like this, it was a franchise like the Spurs or, you know, or a team like that where playing dominant all-time great defense, having a super deep lineup and a really fun, you know, young core from a, you know, a third party, you know, viewpoint, it is probably weighing a little heavy on them, at least as much as it could coming off a title. So I think this team, you know, again, 68 wins last year. You also have to consider that Hartenstein was hurt. Chet Holmgren was hurt. Jalen Williams was playing hurt down the stretch of the season. I mean, it's just with how many different guys they have and how high their floor is because of their defense, it's just really hard for me to see this team not winning 65 games at least, unless SGA misses a considerable amount of time. Because if Jalen Williams misses time or Chet misses time or Hartenstein misses time or Caruso misses time, I just feel like they're so well equipped to be able to make up for that. So I think the only thing that gets them under 62.5 wins is an SGA injury. And we'll see what happens, but I'm going over.
Yeah. I mean, I had the exact same thoughts you did. Well, I'll just say this like right off the top about injuries is that we could do this with every team. Every over you pick, you could just say, well, if X player gets hurt, they're going to be in trouble. We'll talk about the Denver next. There's a player on that team that if that player gets hurt, they're in trouble. So it's like we're almost it's like assuming a 50th percentile health season. The Wolves probably had like last year thinking back, they probably had a better than 50th percentile health season. And that's with Rudy missing a month-ish. Randall and DiVincenzo missing, like that's just that's what happens over the course of regular season. They probably had like a 60th percentile health season. I don't know. But like you said, even if they have like a 25th percentile health season and it's not Shea missing more than a handful of games, they're a regular season wins printing machine. That's kind of what I always say. And I mean, they won the title, so that calling them that almost undersells them because like they won the championship. Me and you doubted that they can do it, and we obviously can't do that anymore. I mean, we can talk about if they are going to repeat, but for the focus of this pod, they won 68 last year, and that was with them. There was no one to push them. They had that thing locked up. They ended up winning the West by 16 games. They were, by the All-Star break, they were clearly going to be the one seed. It wasn't like last season where the Wolves, Nuggets, and the Thunder were all right next to each other. I don't see how they're I mean, yeah, barring just a terrible injury luck season for them, I'm easy over. And I kind of had both of us choose, like, not just pick all these ones, but choose at least five that we thought were, like, if we were going to theoretically bet on these, it'd be these would be at least five that we would do that for me. This Thunder over would be one of them, and it sounds like that's the case for you as well.
It is.
Yep. stinks for the Wolves that the one seed is going to be kind of like a out of reach thing, but we can move on to our next team, the Denver Nuggets. Crazy offseason for them. They ditch the great podcaster Michael Porter Jr., who's had an incredible offseason. But they get Cam Johnson back. They get Bruce Brown back from their title team. Jonas Valanciunas might be missing someone else that they were able to. Tim Hardaway Jr. The depth problem that was so gigantic for them last season is, I would probably think, gone, or at the very least minimized compared to last season where it felt like they had four players and maybe Russell Westbrook that they could trust. And now, I'll just go first on the Nuggets. The number is 53.5. I'm going to go over, kind of almost similar to, like, if you have Nikola Jokic and a half-decent Nuggets team around him, which I don't think he had that last year, but they're going to win a bunch of games. Two seasons ago, they won 58, and I think that's kind of a number I would expect them to be closer to, maybe more like 56, 55, but I didn't choose this as like a lock or whatever, but over 53.5 for Denver is what I had.
Yeah, I think that when you factor in that, you know, Jamal Murray is good to miss 20 games, Aaron Gordon's good to miss 15, 20 games. Even though I like that they brought in pieces on the bench that are reasonable and good facsimiles for the players that they have, when I still just think that this Nuggets team probably takes the route of let's just get in, and you know, we're not going to try to gun for wins. Like, I understand there's an argument to be made that getting the second or third seed is more valuable this year, presuming Oklahoma City is going to be the one, so you wouldn't face them until the Western Conference Finals. But I just think that this Nuggets team trusts who they have, and trust that, hey, that you know this is probably the best supporting cast that Nikola Jokic has ever had, and he's already won a title. So I would feel pretty darn good about the Nuggets. If I was the Nuggets, I would not necessarily be thinking much about the Thunder. I would just trust, hey, you know, we took them to 7 games with a hospital team last year, and we have a bunch of dudes that know how to play with Jokic, are really, really talented, and this team is a lot better than the team that they put out there last year. So I think I'm bearish on the idea that they're just going to like gun for wins in the regular season to try to duck the Thunder in the first round or first two rounds. So I'm going to go under 53.5. It has no bearing on what I think of their team. Like I think that the Nuggets would be my pick to come out of the West this year, but I just think for this exercise, I would not surprise me if they win 50, 51, 52 games.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point that you have, and it'll apply even more to like the bottom half of this list, is what is the team trying to accomplish? Are they trying to gun for wins? Are they trying to, like, what are they just, like you said, just make it? Are they, what, so much of this is like basically, especially for the tanking teams, are they trying? Are winning basketball games something they value? And obviously, the answer, simple answer that for Nuggets is yes, but like, do they like if they end the season with 50 compared to 55? Yeah, that's a good point that they might not care. I still kind of leaned over just because Jokic, but you could convince me either way on that one. But like you said, I'm not sure it really affects their postseason chances all that much. Next, the most surprising line. I was very surprised at this. The Houston Rockets at 52.5. Now that was not all that surprising before Fred VanVleet got hurt. But then FEV is out the entire year, and I don't think the line moved. It might have gone down one.
I'm seeing it at 51.5 right now.
I'm going to go under either way. It's kind of funny if it changed in the last 24 hours. We'll bump it down to 51.5, and I'm still going to go under. So last year they won 52. So either way, basically they're projecting the same type of team. And to me, without Fred VanVleet, this Rockets team is just not as good, either not as good as it was last year, or they're missing a lot of the pieces that made what their team was last year. So basically, obviously not their fault, but they're out Fred VanVleet, Dylan Brooks, and Jalen Green, and in comes Kevin Durant. From a regular season standpoint, that's a pretty darn big downgrade in terms of talent, just because Kevin Durant's not going to play more than 60, 65 games. It obviously raises their playoff ceiling and their title chances greatly. I guess they just don't have, like, in the Wolves, it's kind of funny. The Rockets kind of looked at the Wolves' point guard situation, and now, like, the Wolves are at least have someone there. But, like, the Rockets are either going to play with no point guard or rely on really young guys. I just think the Fred VanVleet injury is such a much bigger deal than at least Vegas thinks it is. I still think they're going to win a whole bunch of games, but 50 plus, I personally just don't see it. And it's one that, I'm confident in. I think Rockets under, just because basically mostly because of the Fred VanVleet injury, and just their team is a whole lot different this year. And we saw what trades do with, like, from the Wolves. It's just going to take time to gel. And from a regular season standpoint, I think it'll cost them the under.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I would also go under here. I think, you know, something that's kind of interesting to keep in mind is that, like, when you think about how these teams like to play, right? The Rockets were the most efficient team last season in the playoffs, just in terms of like their pick and roll ball handling, right? In terms of the way that they were able to score in situations where, you know, Fred VanVleet was handling the ball in pick and roll and just making plays, and they were middle of the pack in terms of in terms of that efficiency last season, but they were top 10. They were eighth in terms of their frequency there. So I think that they're just going to have to play a different style of offense. Even when you consider Kevin Durant coming in, they would have had to play a slightly different style of offense, but now it just is going to be totally different. And you're relying without a true point guard. Like, I am as big of an Amen Thompson fan as there is. I mean, what he did in that playoff series last year against the Warriors was absolutely insane. But I just think that when you're playing with a team that's got, Kevin Durant and Alperen Şengün, two guys that, are both highly efficient scorers. But they need the ball in their hands. They're not guys that I think create a lot of easy opportunities for their teammates just with their gravity by existing and being around on the perimeter. So I think that's going to be a challenge for them. And then when you consider too, it's just a bummer that they totally overpaid for basically no reason to go get a third center in Clint Capella. And that is the reason why they can't go sign somebody with a disabled player exception to replace Fred VanVleet on the open market. Like, I know Russell Westbrook is not, is not a guy that's going to totally change the trajectory of your season. But if you were them, like, you don't pay Clint Capella $5 million more than he's probably worth. And you're at least able to go get a guy that can just, you know, eat innings for you in Russell Westbrook. And, it's unfortunate, but I'm going to go under here for the Rockets. I think that this team is going to be pretty good defensively when you consider they've still got, Jabari Smith, Tari Eason, Amen Thompson, Josh Okogie is there this year. Jayshon Tate will probably have to play more minutes. I still like them a lot as a defensive team. It's just a matter of how quickly can they figure out the offense. And I think I'm a little bit more bearish on the idea that is going to happen earlier on in the season. So it would not surprise me over the second half of the season if they played at a 52.5, 53 win pace. I just think that they won't be able to play at that pace for the first, let's call it until Christmas. And then after that, maybe they hit their stride. But I really like Ime Udoka as a coach and would not surprise me whatsoever if they, still made it to the high 40s, maybe even crack the 50 win mark.
Yep, I agree. I would still be extraordinarily surprised if they were in the play-in tournament or obviously worse. I think they'll win a bunch of games, but just thinking about what their 50th percentile season is, what their average season is, I think that is closer to high 40s than mid-50s, which is the reason for the under. Okay, so tied for fourth, we'll give the tiebreaker to our squad here. So we'll go with the Minnesota Timberwolves at 49.5. We'll try not to be homers, I guess, for the team we cover here, but over under 49.5 for the Timberwolves. They won 49 last year.
Yeah, I'm going to go. This is going to be one of my five. I'm going to go with the over for the Wolves. And I think the reason for this is that, like, the Timberwolves did not start off well at all last season with a relatively soft schedule at the start of the year. And it took a while for, Randall to kind of figure out what the team needed from him. And I think the more that he started to figure out what was needed from him, I think his voice got a little bit louder and guys got to know him better. And this team just started to gel a lot more. And we really saw that down the stretch into the playoffs. I mean, Julius Randle was probably, one of, if not the most impactful, forwards when you look at the entire scape of the Western Conference playoffs last year. I know it didn't go great in the Western Conference Finals, but I mean, he was so good and just absolutely killed Draymond Green in that series against the Warriors. And I think there's more reason for me to believe that they're going to get a version of Julius Randle that's closer to that than what we saw at the start of the season. And if that's the case, I think there's a great chance that Julius Randle could be an all-star this season. I think there's a great chance that Julius Randle could be one of, if not the leading assist guys on the Timberwolves this season, just with the way that he's able to create open shots for his teammates. And I really think that, too, the injection of Terrence Shannon Jr. into, into the Wolves rotation is going to be just something that I think gives guys energy. I think TJ plays super hard, and I think fills a really valuable role on the team of just a guy that can get into the paint literally whenever he wants to, and is clearly a guy who has put a huge emphasis and focus this offseason on playmaking and trying to, let that part of his game shine a little bit more. We've seen that a lot in the preseason, and he's been a really good shooter so far in the preseason. I think 9 of 14 has made a super high clip of his corner threes. I can't remember off the top of my head him missing a corner three in a preseason game this year. So I think, TJ will be able to replace a lot of what Nikhil brought in terms of just like this energy that he brings every night. And like giving a shit is an NBA skill. And Nikhil Alexander-Walker gave a shit every single time he stepped on the floor, played all 82 games. And that was just a constant. And it's not easy to replace that. But I think TJ is going to do that to the best of his ability. And I just think continuity is an important thing as well. And I just, it's hard. And too, like if DiVincenzo plays more than he did last year, I know he missed quite a bit of time kind of right as he was getting a rhythm. And he's a guy that has traditionally, played in a lot of games. So I think if you can keep him healthy, find a little bit more of a rhythm with the guard rotation, it's hard for me to see the Timberwolves being worse than they were last year. And they won 49 games last year. So I'm going to go over. I think the Timberwolves probably land closer to 52 or 53 wins, probably putting in them in the 3 or 4 seed line.
Yeah, I agree. I had the Wolves over as one of my picks. You mentioned it last year. There's so much that felt like it was going wrong last year, and they still won 49 games. Obviously, in this case, that'd be an under, but it's just to win one more game than last year doesn't feel like like that just almost feels like a given. My biggest thing, and this is kind of more of a big picture thing, is Ant is 24 years old. You're out of like being a young player, and you're in the beginning of your prime at this point. If Ant is the type of player we all think he is going to be or is already, and it's the type of player that if you have a solid team around him, which I think the Wolves do, that team just wins 50 games every year. And that's a little bit overly simplistic. And obviously injuries and other factors can come into there, so it's not a hard and fast rule, obviously. But if they can't win 50 games with this version of Anthony Edwards, with this roster around him, it's going to start to raise red flags for me. I'm not sure, red flags, maybe not about Ant or some, like to me, if that's happening, alarm bells are going off in my head, be like, why isn't this team winning more? Why, like, what?
Especially if they continue to lose at the clip they have to bad teams.
Yeah, and the clutch issues were as big of a thing, and they've talked about all preseason and at media day about pushing the pace, and like you mentioned, being better against bad teams, and a lot of it feels like they talk about this stuff all year and then they kind of revert back, and that's true for every NBA team probably. You have your talking points and some hit and some don't, and that's fine. But if they don't win 50 games with this roster. And it's not to say like next year they'll be worse if they just whatever, but I don't see they need to be winning 50 games. And it's if you put them in the West, they'd probably win close to 60, or excuse me, if they put them in the East, you'd probably win like close to 60 just based on the, maybe that's a bit exaggerated, but like the conference is doing a lot here. How many teams are you for sure are going to tank in the West? I think it's just one. Probably should be the Pelicans, but they traded their pick away. That's the only team that's tanking. I guess we'll see if the Suns and Kings unintentionally tank. So that's a lot of what's probably driving down this win number. But do you agree with me? Like it's just time. It's time to start being like a year in, a year out. It's not to say that like they're title or bust or whatever, but like you just got to be like the favorite that we think Anthony Edwards can be.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think when you look at the Timberwolves last year, they were 33-19 against the West, and they were 16-14 against the East. Like, the Timberwolves have played really, really well against Western Conference opponents, and they've just been god-awful against the East. And so I think, again, if Timberwolves can sustain a pace, even 90% of that, so let's say they go 30-22, and then they have maybe like a 75-80% win percentage against the East, they're winning 55 games, right? So, yep. Yeah, I think I was surprised to see this number as low as it was. And I'm not like super bullish on the Timberwolves. Like, I would definitely put Oklahoma City and I would definitely put Denver above them.
Houston pre Fred VanVleet injury above them too. Pre-injury. No.
I wouldn't.
Okay.
But it was a toss-up. The same tier. It was definitely toss-up the same tier.
Right. It was a toss-up before Fred got hurt. And to me, that changes things, obviously.
No question.
All right. Well, we're talking about tiers. Apparently, at least from a regular season standpoint, Vegas has the Clippers at the same tier as the Wolves, exactly 49.5 wins. They won 50 games last year. They traded Norm Powell in a very weird trade where the Miami Heat just get to did they give up anything? Like, they just get Norm Powell and say thank you? Okay. But that trade made no sense from, I guess everything Utah is doing doesn't make any sense, and they're the ones that didn't end up with an actual player in the deal. I should look up the trade before I really say that. I don't really remember what Utah got back, but the Clippers got back John Collins. So Ant will be ready for some Clipper games, I guess. Their over-under is 49.5, like I said. If Kawhi is healthy, I think they should win 50 games. But like, that's why I'm going under, because I don't see them. Here's what I felt last when they lost PG and they retooled this roster. Vegas and the general consensus, I think, overcorrected, because they had them like down at the bottom of the West at this time last year, and now I think what they were able to do last year is part smoke and mirrors is a little bit tough on them, but like, I think now it's overcorrected the other way, where I don't think they added talent. Like, they got Bradley Beal, they got Brooke Lopez, and obviously John Collins for Powell. Like, their team is a lot, and Chris Paul, their team is a lot different. I just think 50 wins with the age of their roster, they got them and the Warriors, who we'll talk about, are just rolling out a lot of older guys. I'm just going to go under. I think, especially in terms of regular season wins, I think they're a good deal. They're a tier below the Wolves. So I'm going to go under 49.5.
I'm going to go over.
Okay.
And the reason for this, Kawhi Leonard last season played in 37 games. And Norm Powell played in 60 games. Like, their two best players played in, you know, less than half the games over the course of an 82-game season.
I still think Harden's probably their second best player.
But, okay, two of their three best players did not play in at least two-thirds of the games. I just think, you know, the Harden-Zubac pick and roll last year was awesome. I think Zubac should have been – was Zubac first team all defense?
I can check.
He might have been second team, but I don't know. Ivica Zubac was awesome defensively last season. This team rebounded everything last year. I want to say they were top five in defensive rebound percentage. And for the most part, like, they had a lot of really good shooters on this team, but they did not shoot the three very often. They were 25th in 3-point rate, despite having, you know, Harden 35%, Powell 41%, Kawhi 41%, Bogdanovich 43%, Amir Coffey 41%. I know some of those guys aren't going to be there, but you still have Nick Batum on this team. I really do think that Bradley Beal, like, has more in the tank as a guy that can get out there and get buckets at a pretty good clip and replace at least some of what you're losing with Norm Powell. I do think that being in a situation like this is probably one that's going to be good for him. Look, and then I think the John Collins acquisition was a really strong one. And then for them also being able to, you know, bring back Derek Jones Jr., who was really good for them for the majority last season, especially defensively. I guess I'm just pretty bullish on this team's defensive capabilities. And then look, I mean, if you can keep Kawhi, Bogdanovich, and Harden, you know, somewhat healthy, I do think that this team is just going to be a bear to play, you know, on a random night when some teams just may not want to bring it. So, look, and I mean, the other part of it too, Chris Paul played what, all 82 last year?
Yeah.
Like, if Chris Paul can, you know, at least play 70 games as just like a really solid backup point guard and just have, you know, good ball handling between him and Harden and Beal, like those are three guys I just trust to have the ball in their hands making plays and pick and roll. So I think this team's a lot more potent than they're probably getting credit for. And I just would not be surprised at all if this Clippers team won 50 games in that home court next year or this year.
Finish your year with your dream kitchen with help from Menards. Clearview Cabinetry offers a selection of finishes made with the finest materials and built to withstand life's sticky messes. They provide features like soft close doors and drawers and cabinet accessories to match your unique style. Don't wait to finish your projects. Save big money on Clearview Cabinets and check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It was a toss-up pick for me, so I certainly don't mind the disagreement. But so okay, I think we'll kind of recap here quick. So I think both of us have the Thunder. Let's keep it to the regular season wise. Thunder by far tier their own, and I think we're kind of I agree with you. The next four teams: Nuggets, Rockets, Wolves, Clippers, are kind of the next tier of regular season wins wise, at least in our thoughts. Where do you think the Wolves stack up in that? I would probably guess they'd be the three seed. In my opinion, I would have Denver 2, Wolves 3, but maybe it's just better to look at as there's this pocket of four teams and I think they'll be better than two of the three, which would give them the three seed. Do you agree with that?
I think the Wolves, look, I think Oklahoma City is going to be the one seed. I'd be really surprised if they weren't. But I think anything after that is fair game for the Wolves. Like, I could see them being the two seed, the three seed, the four seed, the five seed. You know, wouldn't surprise me at all if San Antonio got frisky and won 52 games. You know, I just think that they're going to have to bring it every night. And they certainly have the talent. It's just a matter of whether, you know, injury luck and their ability to play really consistent basketball right off the jump with how much continuity they have is just going to be really important. And so I'm excited to see how they respond to that challenge, especially with trying to bring, you know, three young guys somewhat into the fold with, you know, TJ, Jalen Clark, and maybe Rob Dillingham.
Yeah. And I think basically this is what will, I think, happen last year where the Thunder ran away with it. And then we had this next layer of teams where the 2 through 8 seeds were separated by 3 games or 4 games. I would guess that it would be something similar. Personally, I would like to think and hope that the Wolves will kind of separate themselves from the bottom half of the non-play-in playoff teams. But I do think it'll be kind of similar. The next two teams on this list, which would, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So one of these top 7 teams is not going to make the playoffs outright, which I guess is what happened last year with the Warriors. Having to go beat Memphis in the play-in, but the next two teams are the Lakers and the Warriors, both at 47.5. We'll start with the Lakers. Two of both of these teams, the Wolves ended their season last year, or maybe Curry's hamstring ended the Warriors' season. But first, the Lakers. I was surprised that they didn't go out and get a better center than DeAndre Ayton. And maybe I'm too low on DeAndre Ayton. I would kind of say I don't see it, that he's going to be back to that Phoenix version. Maybe that's unfair to him, but it wasn't just the Portland years that he wasn't, like the last couple of Phoenix years, Ayton was just not the same type of player. LeBron's already hurt with a back injury of some kind. Like, that's not great. I'm going to go under 47.5. I remember talking to you last year it might've been that last game of the season, or it was couple games before when it was clear the Lakers were a potential matchup, and we were both kind of like, and don't love it. but we were, I think I said, like, this is going to be the worst Laker version of this LeBron-Luka pairing. And I was wrong. I think, like, I don't, maybe this team is probably better than last year's team, but, like, I just assumed they were going to be able to fix all of kind of their roster gaps, and they kind of went, they kind of went backwards. They lost Finney Smith. I guess they get Ayton. I don't know. I thought they were going to be able to bring in more rotation guys. But I guess they're still kind of in limbo between this LeBron and Luka generations. Like, obviously they're not going to completely burn LeBron, but ultimately their best path is to really, especially with LeBron hurt now, is to build around Luka. And they, I guess they're, in my opinion, still kind of waiting for that. But yeah, I went under, not a lock by any means, but what do you got?
Yeah, I think this is just Vegas protecting against how many teams want to bet the over on the Lakers just because they have Luka and LeBron. I don't think this team got markedly better in the offseason. I do think that having added shooting around Luka and LeBron with Kleber being healthy for a full season, Laravia can really shoot the leather off of it. I also think that Marcus Smart is a guy who could make 6 threes in a game. He could go 0-for-9. We just haven't really seen Marcus Smart play very much the last couple of years, so it's tough to know exactly what you're going to get. But yeah, I just think with LeBron missing, let's call it the first month of the season, I do think that that's just going to make it tough. And then he's going to have to get put back into the flow of things. And I think that could disrupt some of the rhythm that they may develop without him playing. And so, I, it's just kind of a situation where it's like, would it surprise me at all if the Lakers at the second half of the season played at a 50-win pace? No, it would not. But I just think the Lakers are probably going to be 500, maybe barely above, by the time LeBron comes back. And then we'll see what they do from there. But I mean, look, I was very wrong about this Lakers team when we were breaking down that playoff series last year, just thinking a little bit too much about what Luka did to the Wolves with the Mavericks. But yeah, I just think, again, look, hey, I mean, Luka's a guy that has gotten hurt. And I think with LeBron out, him carrying a heavier load, I just think that increases the risk that Luka's going to get hurt. And I think that factors into how you break that down. So I'm going to take the under here.
Yep. We're in lockstep there. Okay. Last of the teams I would say are fighting for, that are more than likely going to try to get into the top six. The Golden State Warriors, they lost to the Wolves last year. It's hard for them to just, I mean, the Curry injury stunk. Like, I personally am confident the Wolves would have won that series even after game one, but I completely understand the Warriors fans feeling the opposite way. We had the sample size we saw in that series was the Warriors playing extremely well. I mean, by the end of the series, Draymond Green said he was dominated by Julius Randle. I'm not sure what Curry coming back would have helped, but none of that really matters. Ultimately, their old guy got hurt, and they didn't get a real chance to win that series, and the Wolves, a franchise that has not had very much luck go their way, will say thank you and go get trounced by the Thunder, I guess. But yeah, Warriors 47.5. They won 48 last year. What do you got?
Yeah, I think the Warriors, this is kind of a tough one for me. I think this is probably just a byproduct of the Warriors kind of beating just a Western Conference team that just gets beaten up by each other. I think when you consider, the division that they play into and who they're going to be playing, I think that kind of factors into it as well for me. I really do like this Warriors roster. I know I might be alone on an island with that, but I think bringing D'Anthony Melton fully healthy, was a guy they did not have last year. I think Horford is really going to be helpful for them, is just having an adult in the room and a guy that's going to really know how to play around Curry and Draymond. And then, Jimmy Butler too, I still think is a guy whose game can really translate and age pretty gracefully. I just think that for him, it was probably, tough to have to be super assertive in a playoff setting the way that, the Warriors really needed him to be. I don't know that he can do that on a nightly basis, but if he can play off of Steph Curry and just kind of feed off the gravity, that it kind of creates some space for him to operate. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see them go over 47.5, but I'm going to go under here just slightly. I think they probably win 45, 46, maybe even 47 games and lose by the hook. But yeah, would not surprise me at all if the Warriors found a lot more rhythm and you know, were able to pretty seamlessly insert Melton and Horford into a rotation. And then who knows if the whole Jonathan Kuminga saga will sort itself out and he gets traded, maybe they bring something of use back for him and bolster that rotation down the closing stretch of the season. But yeah, really like this team. Just think they probably are closer to 45, 46.
Yeah, I had a complete toss up. I went under just because I was trying to balance out how many overs and unders I had, just to make it like I didn't want to have 10 overs out of 15, which I didn't. But yeah, I went under. It's a toss up to me. It's kind of my question is like they after they made the Jimmy trade from that point to the rest of the season, they were a solid team and their background numbers supported them being like they would win 50 or so games. And the team that the Wolves lost to three times in the span of like a month, that version of that team was not very good. And obviously they added a bunch of talent since then. But I do kind of think just in general, it's always a mistake to like overrate a recent sample compared to a bigger one in the sense of, and it's, again, they added talent, so it's not exactly fair. But like if you just take that end of season and presume that's what they're going to be all year, I think that's a mistake where the team did have issues before the Jimmy trade, and Jimmy solved some of them, but not all of them. So a slight under, like you said, if it's 47 games and are under hits, that wouldn't surprise me. And if they get 48, 49 like they did last year, it's a we had to pick something, and I think we both kind of shrug our shoulders a little bit at that one. But next team, probably if you're making league pass rankings, this team's up there, the San Antonio Spurs and Victor Wembanyama, he's like 7'7", Duncan without even jumping. Like Wemby's insane. I mean, I'm not the first person to make this comparison, but like you get on 2K, you make a 7'7" point guard, you throw all the sliders to 99, and that's what you got. I mean, that's pretty darn close to what Victor Wembanyama is. And it's kind of similar to what I said about Ant, where it's like, Ant's 24. If you can't win 50 wins with them, what are we doing here? Wemby's good, too good to like not win 44 games at this point. So 43.5, I'm going to go over. This is one of those like healthy teams. Wemby has not played a full season healthy. You really hope it's just a basketball fan that's just not like that won't be a every year thing, but they have another all-star caliber player now with him in Fox. They have other talent. They're not just reliant. Like the teams that were his rookie year were just kind of didn't make a lot of sense. So I'm going to go over 43.5. And I do think they're going to try to, I would guess they make the playoffs and will be closer to getting up into that six seed area than they will be like falling out of the play-in.
This is my best bet. And my bold prediction is I think the San Antonio Spurs host a first round playoff series. I think Victor Wembanyama will be the best player in the NBA this season. I don't think anybody will come close to matching the defensive impact that he can make. And this guy has bulked up. He's grown an inch or two. He looks fully healthy. He knows what he's doing. Second season, no more limbo of is it going to be Pop or Mitch Johnson. And this might be a crazy take, but I actually think De'Aaron Fox missing the first 3 weeks of the season might be a really good thing in the sense that you're going to be able to integrate Dylan Harper, who's a rookie, just electric with the ball in his hands, getting more comfortable with Wemby. Between him and Carter Bryant, I absolutely loved what they did in the draft. I thought that those are two of my probably four or five favorite guys in this draft. They got both of them. And then they still have Stephon Castle, who is entering his sophomore year, and I think will have a lot of opportunity to find a rhythm early in the season, and then they can really ease Fox back into it. And you think about it, I mean, this team really is only really felt like only added guys. I love the way that they went and got Luke Kornet and Kelly Olynyk, just as guys that can still be able to stretch the floor a little bit, but still have some size and maybe a little bit more girth to them than what Wemby has. And then can still just have a lot of size in the wing and have a lot of different options. Still having three veteran guys and Barnes, Johnson, and Sohan that can just kind of fill in around is needed. And this team definitely still has the firepower if they want to add to what they have midseason, maybe trade, maybe two of those three vets that I just mentioned to go try to get another guy in the wing. So I think that this line is just like the fishiest one on the board for me. but I think I would pencil the Spurs in closer to winning like 51 or 52 games, just because I think that Wemby is that good and the two young guards they have are, you know, going to be asked to do a lot early on in the year, which I think is going to help them being in a system and an organization that has a pretty darn good track record of developing guards and guys like that, that are multifaceted, can play multiple positions and can play with or without the ball. So I'm really excited to watch this team. This is the number one team I'm most excited to watch in the entire NBA. We'll get to number two later on, but this is the easiest one for me. This is an absolutely hammer it, jump for joy, bet an alternate win total 50.5 and see what happens, team.
Yeah, I can't disagree too much. We are now 8 teams in and we've only had 2 disagreements, and I think both times we kind of were more with the Nuggets, but we were, neither of us had a big objection to the other line, so we're kind of in lockstep here, which hopefully we can find some other paths. But yeah, the Spurs make me think is, throughout NBA history, the talent level, or at least the top teams, how good the top teams are kind of comes and goes, or how many true like dynastic teams and how many of those there are comes and goes. In the 70s, there's very few, not a lot of talent in the NBA, and it's really being split between the ABA. And you get into the 80s and you get the, obviously, the Lakers and Celtics and the Sixers and Jim Peterson's Rockets teams with Samson and Olajuwon. Like, you have these incredible teams, and that kind of, by the early 2000s, that kind of goes away, and it's really just the Lakers and the Spurs that, and the Pistons that dominate. And then by the mid 2010s, it ramps up again. You have these dynastic teams with LeBron and on the Heat and Cavs and OKC's teams, and then the Warriors. And now, basically since Kevin Durant tore his Achilles, we were kind of back in this. There's obviously been great teams, but we're in a period where the top echelon of the NBA is not like these dynastic, incredible teams with multiple Hall of Famers on them. The 19 Raptors are awesome. The OKC team last year is really good. And it's kind of with the Wolves, it kind of makes me think like they should start winning now. Cause I think those big old Goliath teams that ring true for all of NBA history are coming back. The Spurs have possibly, very few players can you go and be like, that guy has a chance, however likely, to be the greatest player of all time. And Wemby is probably the first person since LeBron that has really had that chance. Maybe Jokic is kind of slowly starting to get in there. If they win a second title, if you have 2 titles and multiple MVPs, you're knocking at those type of doors. But Wemby's the first prospect that has had that type of level. The Thunder just won the championship, and they have the most picks. They will have to start dealing with salary stuff, but they have every possible thing to use to mitigate their, like, any second apron stuff. The Nuggets aren't going away. You know the Lakers are going to get someone to pair with Luka. That's just how it goes. Like, when thinking about the Spurs and your giant overbet, it's just like the Wolves' chances now, maybe not this year, but like that's just my bigger picture thought about the NBA. Am I overthinking that, or does my hypothesis have some grounding?
No, I think it makes sense. And I think it just kind of speaks to like the talent that exists in the NBA nowadays. And I think, some players are just placing more of a premium on loyalty and wanting to try to get it out of the mud themselves in their own, market, in their own place. And I think the other part of it too is just like the team building restrictions of the second apron are just going to, I think, kind of feed that more and more and make it harder for teams to sustainably stay together, even if it's completely homegrown. So I think you're onto something.
Yeah, I think especially if it's homegrown, it's going to be, we saw it with Kat. Unfortunately, the guys that you have on your squad and are able to pay the most money are the first people to go. We don't have to have a whole second apron pod and why it sinks the Wolves had to trade away their the franchise at the time, like the second greatest player in franchise history. But yeah, it's I just think like the I mean that I'd even mention the Rockets, who have every sort of pick and thing available to them to improve on. It'd be nice if an Eastern Conference team would do anything, or the Wolves can go over there. That'd be neat. But yeah, so that's kind of I would like to see the Wolves start to be a true title contender sooner or later. Speaking of Luka Doncic, the Dallas Mavericks. Why did they trade Luka Doncic? Why did they do that? And now, I mean, this doesn't have anything to do with this pod, but they should trade Anthony Davis and Kyrie Irving and build around Cooper Flagg. If they were a proper NBA franchise, that's what they should do. They could get a whole bunch of picks for AD. The Rockets would take AD. Can you imagine the Spurs pairing him with Wemby? Like, you trade Anthony Davis, wait a year and trade Kyrie Irving, and you get a whole bunch of stuff. You have it's not like if they did that, they'd have a crappy team. Keep the big guys to play with them. But in terms of this year, I would like them a whole lot more if they were somehow able to flip one of their bigs into a guard, specifically with Kyrie. This goes for Boston too. I'm just really dubious that like Kyrie's going to come back, and it's especially from a regular season standpoint in any meaningful way. They're just going to be cautious. So if that's the case, D'Angelo Russell's your starting point guard. It does make me worry. It was close, but I just think Cooper Flagg will provide them enough for an over. They have enough talent around Anthony Davis and those guys. If Kyrie was healthy, I would really like this team. But I'm going to go slide over. How about you?
Yeah, I also am going to go over with Dallas. I mean, look, the team is still pretty solid. Like, if Cooper Flagg is who we think Cooper Flagg can be, and you're surrounding him, still with, Klay Thompson, Najee Marshall, Max Christie, PJ Washington, AD, Derek Lively. I mean, that's still a totally fine team to me. I think that's a team that can totally be 500. I mean, then if Kyrie comes back in January, I think that seems.
I really don't think.
You don't think that's reasonable?
No. Do you want to do a side? We don't have to put anything on it, but like a side bet of when he comes back.
When did he get hurt? March.
Yeah, it was after the death. March 3rd.
Yeah, I think he'll... Okay. I mean, even if he's back for the last, like, 6-7 weeks of the season, I think this is a 50-win team. 52-win team if Kyrie is healthy the entire year, just because of how deep they are. And I think you're just going to give time for Cooper Flagg to kind of grow with the ball in his hands without Kyrie in there. I think this team's going to be just fine without them and be enough to stay in the play-in mix for sure. And maybe even sniff getting a six seed and staying in that conversation for when Kyrie comes back, and they might make a run for that. So I'm going to go over. I think they win probably 43, 44, 45 games.
Yeah. I mean, 41-41, that seems entirely doable for Dallas. I guess that'd be my thing. And like you said, if Kyrie were healthy, I would really like this team. But he's not. And it's just for them to hit, like get closer to 50 wins, potentially you need him for more than half the season, and coming off a big injury at his age, it's just not going to happen. And why I don't know what their plan was. Even if he was healthy, if Kyrie was healthy, I'd still, and this is after they got Cooper Flagg, like they're not title contenders. They're still either at the Wolves level or below. We don't have to relitigate the Luka trade, but even after getting, like, I just remember people like, oh, the Mavericks got Cooper Flagg, they're dangerous now. And I was like, maybe, but like, they still traded away Luka Doncic. That's just not a thing that happens in NBA history. And AD is a good player, but it's just, I'll never get over that. And it's just kind of one of those things where it's just like, I don't want that to go underemphasized. They traded Luka Doncic. What do you, and he wanted to be there. Like, whatever. Okay. Memphis, 39.5. I couldn't figure this out. You go first on Memphis.
Memphis, I'm going to go over 39.5. I think, you know, as much as I... I can't do it. I got to go under.
Really?
I just think like the vibes there seem terrible with this new coach. Kind of seems like none of the players really like him. Ja's already banged up. Jaren Jackson's already banged up. You know, has a toe injury. I think we've seen that those can just be they're really difficult to deal with, especially for a big guy. I did really like the Coward pickup for them. But yeah, losing Desmond Bane, not really replacing him with like something that's really solid, I think is going to be tough for them to deal with. And I just think that you're placing a lot of faith in some pretty young guys, and your marquee acquisition in the offseason was Ty Jerome. I like Ty Jerome. He's a fine player. But I think that they took a pretty big step back this offseason, and you're betting a lot on, you know, guys like Gigi Jackson and Santi Aldama to be like really, really, really good players for them. And I'll believe that when I see it. Like, I think Santi Aldama is a really solid role player. I just don't know that he can be like your third or fourth best player and have a team win 40 games. So I'm going to go under.
Yeah. I went back and forth on this one too. I guess I went under two. Just they're in the East. 39.5 would be, I'd probably go over on that. Just like, just cause someone's got to win games over there. But yeah, the vibes are not great. Like you mentioned, they lost Bane. That's a huge talent going out the door. They've been super injured the past couple years, and it doesn't appear like the preseason has helped them out any bit with that. So we'll go under. And speaking of bad vibes, the Sacramento Kings next at 35.5. So now we're into the range of teams that likely aren't even going to make the play in tournament. What the Grizzlies confuse us. What the hell is that? What happened? What happened to the Beam? It just, why did they trade Fox and then fire their coach? Like, I don't get any of it. The ownership isn't great there. I'm not sure what about the 2023 Chicago Bulls made them think, yeah, let's give that a try. I'm not sure switching out Vucevic for Sabonis really, if we're running the Bulls analogy, really does much for me. They have Westbrook now. That's good for them. The vibes are just not great in Sacramento. I'm going to go under 35.5. What happened?
The talk of them too, like thinking about trading Malik Monk and like paying to get off Malik Monk to get Jonathan Kuminga is like outrageous to me.
They shouldn't be sending out assets anymore.
I think Malik Monk is awesome. I like a lot of individual players. I love Malik Monk. I love Zach LaVine. I really like Keegan Murray as a role player. I don't love Keegan Murray for 5 years, $140 million. But he's going to be out too. Now for a month and a half with a thumb injury. And I do like the kind of the guard trio off the bench with Schroeder, Nick Clifford, and Devin Carter. But the problem is now you go get Russell Westbrook, who's probably going to cut into all three of those guys' minutes. And they just don't really have a whole lot of depth down low. So I there's just not a lot for me to like in terms of how all the pieces fit together here. I think this is a team where, will not surprise me at all if there's just a full-blown fire sale come January.
It would be nice to get Zach LaVine on an actual good NBA team for the first time in pretty much ever. That'd be really nice. Because, I mean, from his Wolves days, we obviously know, like, defensive-wise, he's a complicated player. But, like, you're telling me Zach LaVine can't be, like, the sixth-man scorer type on, like, a solid playoff team that wins playoff games? Like, he just, from the crappy Wolves teams to the crappy Bulls teams to, like, just, can we get Zach LaVine on a quality team, please.
Yeah, I mean, look, Zach LaVine shot the piss out of the ball last year. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. I mean, the guy shot 45% from three last year, shot 56% from two, is one of the most efficient scorers in the NBA. And if you paired him with like pieces that actually fit around him, enabled him to like just cook. Like Zach LaVine averaged 27.5 points a game in 2021. Then averaged two seasons in a row. Well, really, amidst of four seasons, averaging 24.5 plus. And the guy is one of the best, premier, most efficient scorers in the league. And they're just trying to put anchors around his waist and say, hey, man, good luck. I think he and Malik Monk, that's like one of the most fun backcourts like ever. I would seriously love watching it. It's just, you know, Sabonis is a guy who needs the ball. DeRozan obviously needs the ball. It's just a bummer. I think there's some potential for the Kings to be involved in like some awesome individual games, but I think there's going to be a fire sale at some point. I don't think they get to 35.5.
Yeah, I agree. All right, next team. And you mentioned there's a couple teams that were your favorite League Pass watches. May I guess that the Portland Trailblazers were the second team? Am I correct?
You can guess, but that's not who it was.
All right. Well, we're sticking with the Portland. Did we already talk about them? Or are you excited about one? What?
No.
It's one of these bottom three teams behind
yes,
Portland.
Okay. It is.
We'll stick with Portland. I have their over of 34.5, and I have it as one of my picks. They won 36 last year, and I just feel like their roster is better. I like the way they played down the stretch of last season, and they get Drew Holiday, they have Dame back for the vibes at the very least, and some mentoring and all that stuff. I think that'll be great for them next year, obviously. I guess I don't understand why they're 34.5 when they won 36 last year and were more or less tanking for most of last season. I think they'll win closer to like 38, maybe even 40 games on the best version of their season. What do you think on the Blazers?
Yeah, I think I'm torn on the Blazers because, like, you know, you think about the fact that like Scoot's going to be out a while, right?
Yeah,
which is a huge bummer. They still have Time Lord. I don't know how they have Time Lord, Hanson Young Hanson, and Donovan Klingon. Like, I don't know how that's going to shake out. And then, they just have a bunch of kind of odd misfit, like Jeremy Grant is still on this team. Ton of money. So good for him for getting the bag. Like, Matisse Thybulle's still on this team. And I just think it's odd. Like, I really like Shaedon Sharpe. I really like Denny Avdia. I really like Drew Holiday. I don't know that those guys fit together whatsoever. And this team doesn't really have a point guard without Scoot. And I just think that this team is really going to struggle to score. And I think this team is going to be better than it would appear defensively. I think if I was playing fantasy basketball, I would draft Shaedon Sharpe earlier than consensus, because I think there could be some most improved player opportunities there for him, considering how long Scoot might be out for. So I think I'm going to go under 34.5, despite everything that you laid out makes sense to me. I guess I just don't trust who's going to be handling the ball and getting them into their offense enough to a point where I feel comfortable saying that they're going to win 34.5 games while playing in a division with the Wolves, the Nuggets, and the Thunder.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the disagreement because we've been in lockstep basically till this point. So
I'm glad we go over. Like, I really think I like the Blazers. Like, it's going to be a fun team to watch. I'm very excited to see what Young Hanson is going to do. I think they're just going to unleash him and say, like, if we lose games, we lose games, but like, we're going to have fun doing it. And that's fine, as long as the young players are getting experience.
Very true. All right. Third to last team, the Phoenix Suns. Is this no way that Phoenix is your favorite league best team here?
No.
Okay, then I know who it is.
I don't want to watch a single Suns game if I don't have to.
this team is just going to be like a joyless basketball team, I think. I feel bad for Suns fans because they had a really fun team. And I honestly think that like KD, like that team like had potential to be really fun. I understood the swing to go for it. But it's just a bummer that like your season is resting on like Grayson Allen and Dylan Brooks to help Devin Booker. And, you know, you don't really have much of like a future there. You don't have control of your first round pick. Just kind of a bummer. So yeah, I think this team is going to go, I think this team probably gets over 31.5 wins. I think that Devin Booker is so good and does not get enough respect league wide for just how efficient he is and how much he's grown as a playmaker. And I think that there's a lot of potential for him to be one of the leading scorers in the NBA this season. And I do really like the Malawach and Mark Williams pickups. I think you know, those guys will both benefit a lot from Booker, and I think Booker will really benefit a lot from them. It's just, you know, how much are you going to get out of guys like, you know, Ryan Dunn and Royce O'Neal on the wing, I think is going to determine a lot for them. And I think I just trust Devin Booker enough to be a guy where it's like, how many wins is a guy worth if he's going to play? I think Devin Booker, like your floor as a team is like high enough where I think that they can win 32 games. I think they go like 32 and 50. You know, still not a good team, but like, I definitely think that they could get over that.
Yeah, probably the biggest factor that you'd point to their over is they don't have their pick. So they're going to be trying. If you get to midseason and they're on pace for 30 wins, they're not going to tank it from there. They're going to keep going. But I went under just for the bummer factor that you said. I'll just go off of pure vibes that it's just what's gone down in Phoenix is just a real crap show. Unfortunately. Yeah, I mean, they're up 2-0 in the finals, right? And just couldn't win it. And the franchise kind of collapsed from there. I guess I would say the Twins fans are glad Inishbia isn't owning the Twins, but at this point, I think we'd take a meddling owner over what the Twins situation is.
Totally,
currently at.
Somebody's willing to spend. That's all you need in baseball. It's just you blew all the assets, and in baseball, you don't have to worry about that quite as much.
Very true. All right, here we go. I'll just lay out New Orleans Pelicans 30.5. What do you got, Jack?
Hammer that over, baby. Hammer it. Yeah. This is one of my picks. I love the Pelicans. This is like a toxic ex that you just like can't quit. I love Zion Williamson as a basketball player. I think like going and watching Zion play up close is completely intoxicating. I think like the two guys who I have gained the most appreciation for watching them in person are Zion and Kyrie. Like the degree of difficulty that everything Kyrie does is insane. How fluid of an athlete he is, and his handle and his shot making ability is absolutely insane. But Zion just moves differently than any human being I've ever seen in my life. As someone who is like 6'4", 6'5", 260 pounds, for him to jump like that, have the second jump like that, have the strength, the grace, the mobility, the touch, it's all incredible. And then I just think like Zion, Jordan Poole, and DeJounte Murray when he comes back, like, is just a hilarious trio that is going to be really fun to watch. Like, this team might be in the verge of like getting in a fight with just all the characters that are on this team and all the guys that are going to want to talk trash and just like get their game off. And then you add in two very fun rookies in Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen. I think it's going to be really, really fun to watch. This is like just a game where, or a team where, you turn on League Pass and you have absolutely no idea what the hell you're going to see, but you're probably going to enjoy it one way or the other. And what I really like about this team is like, they also have two wings that I really like as two-way players, between Trey Murphy and Herb Jones. And then I also think Sadiq Bey is a guy, if either one of those guys get hurt, is a pretty solid fill-in. And they also missed Jose Alvarado a decent amount last year too, and they bring him back. So I think they have, you know, three pretty darn solid guards in Alvarado, Poole, and Murray at two solid guys in the wing. And then you have Zion holding it down in the middle. And then, you know, Kevon Looney's going to be out here for a couple weeks, and they don't have a ton of depth inside. But I just think there's too much talent on this team, even if they are god-awful defensively. I just think there's way too much talent in this team to not win 31 games. And like, when Zion has been healthy, for the most part, like, he's been one of the six or seven best guys in the NBA. And to me, there's no reason why, when Zion looks thinner than he has since he's been at Duke, and by all accounts, seems like he's in phenomenal shape for Zion standards. And I mean, look, like, when Zion played 61 games in 2021, what did that Pelicans team go in 2021 when Zion played? In 2021, they only won 31 games, but that was the last year of Van Gundy. And then when Zion played, most of the games in 24, they won 49 games. And then even when he didn't in 22, they still won 42 games. And same thing in 21, 22, they still won 36 games. Like, they play in a division that's not going to be, crazy to win games in, I don't think. Nowhere near the Northwest Division. And they've got guys at all three levels. So I'm going to go with the over on this one. This is the last of my five, bets, if you gave them to me.
Awesome. Yep. I had the same pick, the same over, just 30.5. It's just not a hard number to get to. If Zion is even just like moderately healthy, like plays half the season, they should be able to get there. And then the biggest thing is they traded their pick away. Maybe that probably wasn't smart, but like how they view themselves is trying to win games, at least this year. If it were like 40, obviously that'd be different, but like, you need to win 31 games. That's it to hit the over. Like, that's just, I almost feel like I typed it in wrong. Like 30.5. That seems way too low. So we'll both go over. And then the last team that I particularly don't really want to talk much about, Utah Jazz. We're going to just tank into infinity. Like that's what we're doing. That's clearly what they're doing again. They traded away half their roster. They won 17 games last year, and I don't know why they would win more. I don't know. I don't know what they're like. Just do like, it's just lame. It's just lame for those fans out there. So under 19.5.
Who's your favorite? There's no way, and I completely forgot he plays for the Jazz, player on the Jazz.
I mean, the problem is half of them are former Wolves, so it's like Kyle Anderson and Kevin Love, probably.
Mo Bamba on the Jazz roster. Mo Bamba.
That feels wrong. That's I think Niang is there now. Did he get rerouted there after Boston? I think
he did for now.
Yeah. So
I guess the argument for the Jazz winning more than 19.5 games is like, you've still got some vets that are like competent basketball players, like Niang, Kyle Anderson, Kevin Love, Nurkic, Markkanen. Look, and like Kyle Filipowski was pretty good last season. I think Bryce Sensabaugh is a guy who could give you like 16 points a game if you just really let him cook. You still have Walker Kessler. I mean, it's hilarious how many bigs they have, like four or five guys they have. So there's definitely going to be some chairs shuffling for the Jazz. And I just think like between Keontae George, Isaiah Collier, like you have enough guard play where like, and Walter Clayton, I mean, if he gets in the mix too, I mean, who knows? Just as all guys that can handle the ball and shoot threes and spot up and make shots. And then with Ace Bailey kind of being your guy on the wing at the three, I don't know. Like, I know they're going to tank. For me, it just comes down to like, are they going to trade Markkanen or not? And if they trade Markkanen, I think there's no chance they reach 19.5 wins. But if they keep Markkanen, and they are they going to keep all these vets like Kyle Anderson, Kevin Love, Nurkic? Like, I just don't know how that's going to go. This is a toss up for me. I'm going to go under just barely. I think they like 18, 19 wins. But again, like, I'm not going to be surprised whatsoever if this team cracks like 22, 23 wins, just because they do have, I think, more competent players on their roster than most teams that are going to tank do.
Yep. Fair stuff. For me, it's just like someone's got to eat the losses in this conference. Somebody's got to do it. So I'll take yeah, Utah to be that punching bag. All right. So that's our Western Conference. We're not going to do the Eastern Conference. We're not going to throw out a 4-hour pod out there. But pick one team over under you like from the Eastern Conference. I took Celtics under, and it's just kind of being like, why are they going to try? I know like Boston people are thinking Tatum's going to come back before the end of the season. And I'm really dubious that that's going to, one, medically be the right call. And two, that based on their team and where their record is at, I just think they're more likely to find this like gap year and like semi tank halfway through the season. And they just don't have any bigs. They tore the whole thing down. Aside from basically Jaylen Brown, Derek White, and to a lesser extent, Anfernee Simons. Their starting front court is like Sam Hauser and Nemus Kida. I'm probably not even pronouncing that right. They got Boucher. They got our boy Luka Garza out there. Josh Minot and Wendell Moore are dunking on people. It's a lot of former Timberwolves, weirdly, at the fringes of the rotation. I don't know. Peyton Pritchard's fun off the bench. They lost too much talent, even in a week in Eastern Conference, and I think they're going to have incentive to not full-on tank, but semi-tank out of the playoffs, grab your eighth pick instead of the 14th pick, and they'll be able to retool once Tatum comes back. I think they're like slightly over the luxury tax line by like thousands of dollars, so that would probably point to a cost-cutting move to reset the repeater tax. So under 42.5 for the Celtics. It's literally just an injury pick. If Tatum was healthy, obviously they would be closer to 60 wins. I guess not since they traded all their team, but last year's team was in that range. Did you have an East line that you liked?
I do. I'm looking at the Milwaukee Bucks. The Milwaukee Bucks is at 42.5. Since Giannis Antetokounmpo became kind of, you know, since he became an all-star back in 2016, 2017, they have gone under this number one time. And that team had Dele, Malcolm Brogdon, Middleton, Jabari Parker, Michael Beasley, and Giannis were like the main guys on this team. Like, that team was awful. And he dragged that team to 42 wins. This team for the Bucks, like, look, I get it. Like, looking forward, this Bucks team, like, probably isn't going to be great moving forward. But, like, I actually really don't mind this Bucks team. I think they've got, you know, halfway decent guard play in Cole Anthony, who I think is going to be pretty good for them, playing a little bit more up-tempo pace. I think Ryan Rollins has some juice with the ball in his hands. They're bringing Kevin Porter Jr. back, who, obviously don't need to litigate how not a fan of Kevin Porter Jr. I am as a human being, but the guy was halfway decent as a guy that could just kind of get his last year for them coming off the bench. And then, you know, you still have a pretty good setup on the wing between, Portis is still a guy that can play for you. I don't love Kuzma, but you still have Torian Prince and Gary Trent Jr., two guys that I really like. I think Amir Coffey could be good for them too as a secondary initiator on the perimeter. And then, you know, you still have Giannis and Miles Turner, which is a super formidable defensive front court. And I like the way that those two guys could play off each other offensively. And then, you still have, you know, two other pretty decent shooters in Andre Jackson Jr. and AJ Green. Kind of there too, that can help fill out the rotation. And it would not surprise me whatsoever if this became like a buyout team where like you know, there's a halfway impactful buyout guy that just like wants to slot in there, either getting some point guard minutes or trying to slot in at like that 3-4 spot, eating into a little bit of the minutes that might go to Kuzma and Bobby Portis. So I just would be really surprised. Like, I think there's enough spacing on this team to totally just let Giannis cook. And I think if Giannis is Giannis this season, but there's just like almost no argument for the Bucks going under 42.5 wins. So I'm going to take the Bucks over 42.5.
Yeah, I like that. And when Dame got hurt, obviously, and they lose in the playoffs, the calls were to trade Giannis. And obviously that makes sense given that they're still probably not a title contending team and the pick situation is rough, and they made it even more rough with now a bunch of Damian Lillard dead money on their cap space. But I think it was a smart move not to trade Giannis. If you have Giannis Antetokounmpo on your team and he's not actively wanting out, you keep him. And you especially keep him in an Eastern Conference. Like, obviously the Bucks making the finals would be unlikely. Would it be insane? I don't think so. You have the best player in the conference.
And I think you need to go to look back at like injuries. Like, every NBA playoffs for the last 10 years has had pretty seismic injuries that have completely changed the trajectory of one conference or the other, completely allowed a team that maybe was a first round out to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, Western Conference Finals, the finals, or like completely win a ring. Like, no one was even thinking that the Raptors had any shot of winning a ring, and then all of a sudden they win a ring. Like, when you have a player like that, you owe it to the player, you owe it to your fans, you owe it to your organization to at least go for it. And I think they have enough guys around Giannis where like they can hang around in the Eastern Conference, and like, you know, who knows, maybe they see the Knicks and the Knicks see an injury, or the Magic have an injury, or you know, let's say Cleveland just has no answer for Giannis and he just completely dominates the series, and then, you know, the guards make enough shots. I mean, like, anything could happen. I just think that Giannis is one of those trump cards that you have in a situation like this and can play it at any time. And so I'm not one that's going to bet against Giannis if the total is 42.5.
Yeah. And here's what I think about is, maybe, I don't know if the most likely scenario, but certainly a likely scenario is they play well this year. They're just not enough. And Giannis goes, hey, I gotta go somewhere else, and they trade him. If that's how it plays out, I would argue that this year, the title odds the Bucks have this year will be the best title odds they have in minimum a decade, maybe 20 years. Like, it's hard to win a title, and it's hard to find players as good as Giannis Antetokounmpo, and especially when you don't really have any short-term future after Giannis's leave. I am completely with them, like, holding on tooth and nail to this version of this team, because it's dark on the other side. And even if it's just like, we're here to have fun, and like, the people of Milwaukee love him. And so even if it's just that, even if that's the only reason, I think it makes sense for them to keep him until he, if and when he comes to them and is like, it's time, then you have a different conversation. But I don't think that's happened yet. And well, I think he'd be on a different team if it had happened yet. But, and if he is traded, can an East team do anything? Please. An Eastern Conference team trade for him. Because we're just going to have like the 10 best players all in the same conference. You muted yourself.
How did it work out the last time the Bucks tried to trade one of their star players to an Eastern Conference? Or, you know. I mean, I know we went to Portland and then they routed him back to Boston, but still, like, it's a crazy world, man.
I mean, I just, the conference imbalance, I don't know how to look this up without doing a bunch of little math, but like, this year might be the biggest like record advantage the West has over the East, maybe ever.
Cause I feel like we say that every year and it keeps getting worse.
Yeah, but Tatum and Halliburton were healthy every other year.
That's for sure. And that's the thing too. I feel like it's always stars moving and it's just stars not being healthy. Although Tatum might be back by Christmas at this point. I mean, no. Good God.
No, nope, Nope. Your college friends have gotten in your ear too much on that one.
Not a no. Joke. I actually have very few college friends that are Celtics fans. I'm just saying, he guy wants to play.
That just okay. I mean, they obviously have more information than I do, but okay. That's where we ended on my confusion with Jason Tatum's injury history that I have little to no information about, which is
well, his the best surgery kind of podcast. His surgery is pretty unique in that he had surgery within like 12 hours of tearing his Achilles, which like never happens.
Yeah.
So we'll see. It'd be good for him. I mean, good for him if that ends up happening, but we'll see.
Yep.
Otherwise, they got to watch Luka Garza and.
All right, you got a pick for Wolves Blazers out in Portland on Wednesday next week?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with the Wolves. I just think not enough guard play from Portland to make it happen.
Yeah, I mean Portland's kind of a house of horrors for the Wolves at this point, but at least like it's the first game of the year. You're not gonna get whatever midseason lull that you get out there, and they only play once out there in a row because it seems like every year they play back to back out there. So we get one, and then second game of the year, we're already we got an injury advantage.
God, I hope Young Hansen plays like 28 minutes, and we just get to watch him cook.
Yeah, hopefully Young Hansen isn't the new Obi Toppin, and it's just murdering the Timberwolves. That'd be.
Hey, he missed a few threes in that preseason game. It was nice to see that for once. So
yeah, well, yeah, he got him out of his system in the preseason, and that it's just like he's already hit. Somewhere
that was one of the most insane magnet three ball games I've ever seen in my life.
Oh my god! He's already 4 for 5 in the home opener. Like before we even. All right. Thanks for coming on, Jack. For Jack, I'm Ryan. Thanks everyone for listening. Go Wolves.
Ayoo!